From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on a Friday night before Christmas, the coldest night of the season so far, when wind chills were in the single digits. City Court Judge Michael Lopez had issued an order setting a two-hour deadline for police to arrest a woman named Cleanda Florence Yardy and anyone attempting to prevent the eviction of her from her home in Rochester's Cornhill neighborhood. Housing advocates have long protested evictions and have been particularly pointed in their critique of evictions during the pandemic. Now, with temperatures dangerously low, advocates wanted to send a message. And among them was New York State Assemblyman Damon Meeks, who has said that evictions during a pandemic are inhumane. You might be surprised to hear that evictions are still taking place, by the way. After all, Governor Cuomo said just last week that the state moratorium on evictions will be extended to January. Doesn't that settle it? Well, no. And the governor's comments have only served to confuse the issue. First of all, landlords can still evict tenants who damage property or threaten others on the property. They have to prove it, of course, but that's one way landlords can claim they want tenants out. Landlords are not supposed to be able to evict tenants who can't afford to pay. But as my colleague Gino Finelli detailed for City News, that's not also entirely very simple. Some judges are siding with landlords and throwing out the eviction moratorium on grounds that it doesn't hold up legally. There's a federal eviction moratorium, but as Finelli describes, it's toothless. So evictions have continued. This is a complicated situation. I've heard from landlords who plead with activists to recognize that not all landlords are big multi-million dollar corporations or out-of-state companies. Many landlords are struggling to pay their mortgages and have gotten very little help during the pandemic. They ask, what are we supposed to do? Well, Assemblyman Damon Meeks was one of more than a dozen people who protested the eviction of Florence Yardy in Rochester earlier this month. Meeks was arrested, and he's due back in court on January 4th. He says he's already working on ways to address evictions on the state level. He says that during the coldest months of the year, with COVID spreading at dangerous rates, it's wrong to keep kicking people out of their housing. Later this hour, we'll talk to the woman who was evicted earlier this month. But first, we welcome Assemblyman Damon Meeks to discuss the issue and his arrest. Assemblyman Meeks, welcome back to Connections.
Thank you.
I want to start by asking you about moratoriums in general. Last week, we heard Governor Cuomo say that the state was extending the moratorium on evictions to January. And a lot of people might feel confused because they hear, well, there's supposed to be a moratorium, but we see people getting evicted. What's really going on?
Yeah, that's really a problem. The fact that people are being evicted during a moratorium. But a number of the challenges with some of the language was how it was interpreted by different people throughout the community. And it gave a lot of discretion to the judges in which, you know, it was basically if you were affected in a certain way before March 7 of 2020, it didn't apply to you. So, for instance, if you have someone who say they decided to go from one industry to a next and they were seeking employment in another industry and that industry happened to shut down due to COVID. They may not have necessarily been able to say that my hardship was due to COVID. Your hardship was based upon you changed industries at the wrong time and now you can't afford to pay rent or your mortgage. So with that being said, looking at the fact that people are dealing with hardships one way or another, and just the struggle of the pandemic doesn't make it any easier. So we have to take those things into consideration as representation and do what's in the best interest of New Yorkers.
So when it comes to the events that have been now pretty heavily publicized earlier this month when you were arrested, take me through that day. When did you know about the eviction and what was going on?
So that evening, I was actually headed to the store and received a text message saying that a mother and her three children were being evicted forcefully. And in that moment, I'm like, wow, you know, that's crazy. I looked at the temperature in my vehicle and it said 19 degrees. And I'm like, no, we can't be evicting people at 19 degrees, a mother and her children. And I went over to the address hoping like maybe I can help some way somehow, possibly mediate or at least say, hey, you know, if you need to throw some things in the back of the vehicle here, we can help you get to wherever. So when arriving on scene, I seen, you know, you had the group eviction watch. They were standing in front of the home on the steps of the home in support of the family. And I look down the street and you see this huge show of force from the Rochester Police Department, at least 30 plus officers who had on the helmets and looked like they were prepared for a riot. And I just really couldn't believe that that show of force was being used for an eviction. So I immediately said, well, you know what? I think I need to show this to the community. And I began to go to Facebook Live and actually record what was going on. And I was standing in the street because the street, you know, folks, basically no one was really in the street. So I stood in the street and was filming what was going on. And the officers immediately came directly to me and arrested me. And I told them that, hey, I'm here as a witness. You know, I wasn't chanting. I wasn't, you know, anything, you know, and they just arrested me in that moment. And come to find out later on, over 15 individuals had been arrested, including myself. And initially the warrant read along the lines of a no APT order, meaning no appearance ticket. So even understand like the warrant was written that day, knowing that the numbers of the COVID numbers in our county jails and in the jail downtown were steadily on a rise. And I just didn't understand that someone would write a warrant calling for individuals to actually be arrested and detained. So that was a bit disturbing, but, you know, I'm thankful to the community members and leaders who, you know, pushed back. And I guess eventually it led to the judge rescinding that verbally. So all 15 individuals did receive an appearance ticket, but it was quite ugly, to say the least.
Well, and what's next for you legally? Are you supposed to be in court in January?
Yeah, I'm scheduled for court on January 4th. You know, I don't know. I don't know exactly what will take place on that day. So I'll be consulting with an attorney and, you know, seeing where we go from there. I was definitely wrongfully arrested. And, you know, I thought I was operating within my right, like to just be there as a witness and, you know, film what was going on.
Sure. Assemblyman Meeks, just before we can move to some other issues here, just to be clear on the subject of your arrest, I thought this community has had years to learn, starting with Emily Good and with the advent of technology, citizens are allowed to take video if they're standing on public property. Police don't have to like it, but they're not supposed to arrest you if you're doing nothing but taking video. Were you doing anything to try to physically obstruct officers?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No.
Okay. So on then the subject of who's responsible for what's going on here, I want to read some of the statements from Mayor Lovely Warren. She issued a statement urging the court to dismiss all the charges against the tenant and those demonstrating for justice. The mayor was quoted as saying, "It's the holidays. People are suffering from under the dark shadow of the pandemic and the economic crisis. The last thing the court should do is put people out in the cold." She said, "I urge the federal and state governments to provide rent relief and mortgage assistance for responsible landlords. This is an issue that I raised when I met with the state delegation. The city has done our part by allocating millions of dollars for emergency rent assistance and legal aid. Now city governments are being ordered to take terrible actions in the face of the lack of political will in Washington and Albany," end quote. The mayor is essentially saying she's sort of outside of this process. That, and by the way, so did the police. The police put out a statement saying that they were following a judge's orders, that they don't have the ability to tell the judge to take a hike, that they said they're following the orders, and that when they do that, they try to provide alternative housing options when someone is being evicted. So let me ask you then, Assemblyman Meeks, does the mayor's statement hold up to you when she says, look, this is going to be up to the state and the federal government, you know, don't put us in this position where we have to do things like this?
Well, I'll say this as a state representative. I mean, I'm I'm doing what I can do, like as far as underground here in the community. But I'm also working with my colleagues at the state level to really push for legislation that will protect people during this pandemic. And with that being said, we're looking to we're meeting today actually at 1 o'clock. We'll be going into session, and we're looking to pass the COVID-19 Emergency Eviction and Foreclosure Prevention Act, and that will extend through May 1st. And we're looking at it from a total different angle and really pushing to protect citizens of New York.
What will be different about this act, and I mean different from what the current quote-unquote eviction moratorium is, that would actually prevent eviction?
So I think putting things in place in which individuals can actually complete a form of sorts and speak to a hardship and speak to, and even putting some ownership on all parties as it relate to an individual being informed that they have an option to request a pandemic or COVID hardship during this time. And no, this is a moratorium. So I often explain that to people because I've had some colleagues say things along the lines of, well, you have people who have the ability to pay that's just refusing to pay in this moment. Well, I'm a firm believer that majority of the people, if they can pay their rent or their mortgage at this time, they will. Because no, this is a moratorium, not a cancellation. So in other words, you may still have to pay this down the road at some point. I know some of the banks have been fairly lenient to the point where they're not moving forward with foreclosures. And at the end of the day, I think in those type of situations, it may end up on the end of that loan that a person may have received from the bank or on the end of the mortgage. So you may go, say, 12 months without paying, but then that'll go on the end of your loan from the bank. And you may end up paying more over time. So I think that most folks, if they have the opportunity to pay or have the ability to pay during this pandemic, they will.
Assemblyman, I talked to someone who's very active in the local activism community, someone well-known, someone who has been on the side of Free the People Rock, on the side of a lot of the social justice movements for change. And this person told me that their biggest concern with the current public conversation about evictions and tenants' rights is that it sort of frames things to make it seem like all landlords are the same and all landlords are multi-million-dollar corporations out of state. Instead of seeing that a lot of landlords are hurting, they can't pay their mortgages. If they've got tenants who can't pay their rent, they're in even more trouble. They're not rich. They're just getting by. And this person just urged me to remember that this is complex, that there's a lot of layers of pain, and landlords are not just out to sort of, I mean, I'm sure there are quote-unquote bad landlords or irresponsible landlords, and all of that is complex, but this person is saying, not everyone is in that category, and let's be careful here. A lot of people are hurting, including a good number of landlords. Do you see it that way, too?
Absolutely. I think there's a number of, like, small landlords that are hurting. You know, this legislation also looks at protecting them as well, and their properties, like small landlords with 10 units or less. However, I think this is a pandemic. Like we often say, in the middle, but we're not sure. Hopefully, the vaccine and between the vaccine and herd immunity, you know, we can get past this thing in some months to come. But the reality of it is, I mean, we're traveling like uncharted territory. And at this point, we really have to look at ways that we can support and protect New Yorkers. And in the meantime, as a state, we're pushing the federal government, right? We know that New York State pays more money than any other state as it relates to what we put into the federal government. And we don't necessarily receive our fair share back. So with that being said, we're also looking forward to, you know, a new president in Joe Biden as it relates to getting those additional resources to the state of New York so that way we can actually assist, you know, these landlords and others, you know, financially. So we do recognize these challenges, and we're fighting and we're advocating and looking at different streams of revenue in order to protect New Yorkers.
All right. Finally, Mr. Semenman, you've been talking about what you want to see done at the New York State level. You're talking about your optimism with an incoming change in the presidential administration. What do you want to see in terms of housing rights, the housing situation, and evictions? What do you want to see police and the mayor do next? I mean, they certainly have a lot of sway in this, too.
Honestly, I don't think that show of force is needed as it relates to a civil matter. I just don't. I mean, no one had committed a crime. And I posed that question to the transporting officer while I was in a vehicle. I'm like, did you guys receive notice that there was a threat of violence? And he's like, you know, I can't say. I don't know that, you know, to use that type of force. So I would like to see the city of Rochester commit to not utilizing police resources in that manner. Also consider mediators. There's a number of different folks in the community that could step up. Even, you know, from the faith-based communities that could step up and possibly mediate these type of situations and assist a person, you know, during such trying times. So, I mean, we're doing what we need to do on our part at the state level as far as the legislation is concerned. And I think that this will help a great deal in order to keep people in their homes. And it also, in a way, helps us fight back against, you know, this pandemic, against the virus, because we want to have the ability to track individuals, even once we start with the vaccine. You know, they have to get receive two different vaccinations. So you go for one shot, you're evicted, you can't be tracked. We don't know where to reach you at. And it's just like, oh, well, you need a second shot. The first one worn off. Now what? So I think that this bill here will really affect some change. And it's Assembly Bill 11181, and there's another one coming out of the Senate, and hopefully we'll sign off on this today and get things rolling and really protect citizens.
That is Assemblyman Damon Meeks joining us, and he's getting back to work in session in the New York State Assembly this hour, so we appreciate Damon's time. And I want to bring in studio my colleague from City News, Gino Finelli, who has covered these issues probably more closely than anybody. I also want to mention Gino and I are both masked up for this, just for the sake of safety. By the way, thanks for being here. So let's start, Gino, and do me a favor, since you're a print guy, swing that microphone right over close to you. Don't be afraid. There we go. I kind of want to hear your beautiful voice.
Is that close enough?
That's good.
All right, good.
You recently wrote that there has been a lot of confusion over eviction moratoriums, and we talked about that with Assemblyman Meeks. But when the governor keeps mentioning an eviction moratorium, what's the result?
The result is, as you can see from watching social media around things like the eviction blockade and all the things that have been happening in the past few months, is that a lot of people seem to believe that you cannot be evicted right now. There's an understanding that when Cuomo called for an eviction moratorium in October, that meant that you could not be evicted, but that actually wasn't the case. The extension of the eviction moratorium that Cuomo had announced in October was actually an extension of the Tenant Safe Harbor Act, which is a legal defense you can use in court if you were impacted by COVID and you're being evicted for non-payment. You are supposed to not be able to be evicted, but that leaves a lot of loopholes and a lot of different areas where people actually can be evicted and could still face consequences for non-payment or any other reason that a landlord might have to evict someone.
Do you, I want to ask you about the way this has been covered, because I know you've been critical without making it personal with fellow journalists. And a lot of people don't cover this week to week or as closely as you have. Mm-hmm. But do you think there has been a lack of public understanding based on some of the way these issues have been reported?
Absolutely. I think that many times we see when the governor calls something an eviction moratorium, mm-hmm. This is a great example of it. There are many media outlets, many reporters who will use that language because that is what the government official that announced it used, but they don't look any deeper or they don't ask enough questions from people to actually understand the law. I mean, look, this is a very complicated issue. it's complex. I am not a lawyer, and I can't assume that I understand the intricacies of a law that is affecting how the courts work. But you need to talk to people that actually are involved with that and have a better understanding of how these things work to actually paint a fully accurate picture. And I think it has resulted in people being misled and believing things that are not exactly accurate about how things are actually working in New York right now.
Yeah, and even past the state-level stuff, on the federal level, if people have heard about an eviction moratorium, you've pointed out, it has proven to be toothless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you take it to court, this is a CDC announced moratorium. They're the ones that said that people shouldn't be evicted during the pandemic. But when it's tested in courts, the judges, it's up to them. And if they want to follow it, they can follow it. If they don't want to, they don't have to. And time after time, they don't follow it. And they call it, sometimes it's been referred to as unconstitutional, and that was the reasoning for it. It creates a situation where, yes, there is a moratorium on the federal level, but is it actually doing anything? No, it's not. It just simply isn't.
All right, two other points on this, and then we'll let you go, Gino, and we appreciate your time here. Mayor Warren put out a statement saying that, quote, the city has done our part when it comes to the housing crisis. And some critics have said, hey, well, why were police going in there? And you heard Assemblyman Meek saying, why were they dressed the way they were? Why were they as aggressive as they were? What's really going on here? The police have said, we got an order from a judge. We are following the order from a judge. And we try to offer alternatives when it comes to housing if someone is facing eviction. But we try to help people, let them know about the options. But we're just doing our jobs. This, to me, harkens back to the summer when there were demonstrations regarding Daniel Prude. And the mayor was sort of saying, hey, the police are going to do what they do, as opposed to saying, you know, they serve at the pleasure of the city and I'm the head of the city. Is there more that could happen at the city level to maybe amend some of the actions on evictions?
So I will give credit to the city that they have done things. They have done things to help. They have the Right to Counsel program.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a good amount of money from the COVID relief that's been put into renting assistance. Is it enough? Probably not. I would actually say it's definitely not enough, but the city
they're also facing their own budget.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The reality is the city makes the decisions whether or not the police respond in the way they do. They can put out orders that say you can't respond this way. And we saw that during the protest over the summer. I mean, the first George Floyd protest turned into a nightmare scenario. And it was partially a responsibility of the police that were there that escalated the situation. And partly responsible of a good amount of protesters that also escalated the situation. There was a balance there, but the police response was definitely escalative. And we saw that change afterwards when we started trying to do things differently, at least from the city level. So could the city say you can't go in there in riot gear and remove people from buildings? Maybe. But does that really solve the problem? No, because we need aid on a state and federal level for those things to actually be solved. I don't think the city can be held completely responsible for the things that are happening because it's the higher up levels of government that need to do something about it.
And have some power to do some things.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the bottom line is if we hear eviction moratorium, understand there is not an eviction moratorium. Evictions are still going on.
Evictions are still going on. Moratorium in this sense means for a very select group of people that have been impacted by COVID and are being evicted for non-payment. And right now, that's a legal defense. You still have to go to court. If you worry about being evicted, you should probably get a lawyer right now because a lot of people seem to think that nothing could happen. But something can definitely happen, and you need to be proactive more than anything else.
Yeah, otherwise people are going to be caught by surprise, and they are being caught by surprise.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Great work on this, as always. Thanks for what you're doing, and we'll continue following in City News.
Thanks for having me.
Gino Finelli from City News, trying to get us all up to date and really kind of square up what we understand about the reality of evictions and moratoriums. Let's take our only break, and we're going to come back and talk to the people who not only were involved in that well-publicized case in Rochester earlier this month, but with some people who've been working on these issues for quite a while. Let's take that break, and we'll be right back with you on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're talking about eviction in the city of Rochester and in New York State, and we're talking about the reality of it. Despite hearing that there's an eviction moratorium, evictions are still happening. Graham Hughes is co-chair of the Rochester Housing Justice Alliance and is with us now. Graham, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Liesl Coleman is with us, a volunteer with the Citywide Tenant Union of Rochester. Liesl, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Evan.
And Cleonda Florence Yarday is with us, who was at the center of that well-publicized case in the Cornhill neighborhood earlier this month. Cleonda, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get to Cleonda's story, Graham, why don't you give me a sense for what the mission of the Rochester Housing Justice Alliance is and how you see things in December of 2020 when it comes to evictions and housing.
So the mission of the Rochester Housing Justice Alliance is to make housing a human right for everybody in our community, in the city of Rochester, and you know, really throughout the entire world. The housing crisis in our community has been going on for decades, and it's only been made worse by the coronavirus pandemic. Before COVID hit, the city of Rochester had between 8,000 and 9,000 evictions every year, and thankfully, a number of people in our community are protected by the eviction moratoriums that do exist. But unfortunately, those moratoriums do not protect everybody. You know, there's more than 100 cases in city court today of evictions, and that number rises every day. So, in addition to evictions, there's hundreds of people that go homeless. Huge numbers of people, tens of thousands of people in our community that are rent burdened, and probably even more than that live in low quality housing. So we are still in the midst of a housing crisis, and unless we do something dramatic, not only to prevent evictions but to deal with the underlying causes of this housing crisis, it's only going to get worse.
Liesl, how do you see the issue right now?
Well, we're very excited about the bill that Assemblymember Meeks was discussing earlier that does create a blanket two-month eviction moratorium. And what this does is it gives us a little bit of time for tenants and landlords in court to learn about their rights. It's a 60-day suspension on all proceedings. They're going to translate the declaration, implementation, get new notice language up on the website. And most importantly, they'll be mailing a form to tenants that they'll be able to make that hardship declaration. So right now, where we're at is kind of waiting with bated breath to see if the assembly does pass that. Then we'll need to see whether or not the governor signs it into law. And upon that, I think there would be a huge sigh of relief for many people who have been slipping through the cracks in this eviction crisis. If you had a holdover eviction like Cleonda's, then you weren't eligible for the protections of the Tenant Safe Harbor Act. And if you didn't show up to court because you didn't see a letter letting you know when that was, then you might have had an eviction warrant signed and not even had a chance to, argue that for yourself in court. So, we're apprehensive to see what happens with this bill in the assembly. And we know that there's much, much more that needs to be done in order to deal with this crisis, because that eviction moratorium is only a Band-Aid solution, because people are, really gathering a tremendous amount of back rent. And also, smaller landlords are having a difficult time making their mortgages.
Yeah, and Liesl, just before I get to Cleonda's story, could you address that point a little bit more here? I think it's, as I said to the assemblymen, I've heard from even people who have worked really hard on issues of activism, social justice issues, people who work with Free the People Rock, who have told me privately that they're almost afraid to come out and say, yeah, I know landlords and I'm worried about them too, just because it's become kind of a polarized thing. But some landlords are really hurting, and some landlords are not, necessarily wealthy or out-of-town corporations. And there's a real question on what happens, for them. I mean, I want to keep tenants sort of at the center here, but I do want to hear your thoughts a little bit more about that.
Sure. Yeah. So, of course, the person at most risk here is the tenant, who their option is being homeless after this situation. But there are smaller landlords, and I would say that people are paying a lot of attention to that at the assembly level. There is a Rent and Mortgage Cancellation Act of 2020 by Assembly Member Yuli Nu that would really try to, put the pressure on the banks instead of the average person who isn't going to be able to pick up the slack of this crisis. So while we are focused on those who are the most vulnerable in this situation, which is the individual who is at risk about getting put on the street, I think that there is a lot of attention being paid, with different bills that people are looking for financial assistance for small landlords that are able to demonstrate financial hardship.
Okay. Cleonda, can you take me through some of the events that happened on that Friday night that we described earlier this month? From your own perspective, what built up to that and take me through that day?
Well, really what built up to that was some longstanding issues of my landlord not having a CFO, rodents in the townhome, my family and I having to move last December this time into a hotel, to the city being notified about this, knowing then that he had all these outstanding violations, to getting a 30-day notice because I basically spoke up and said something about the condition of the townhome. To me, investing my own money to eradicate and cure some of the issues within the townhome, because I was laid off from the Rochester City School District last December, it put me in a catch-22, because as I was looking for another place to live, this occurred. But then again, we have this issue where the city has different things in place, and yet they just gave him fines. I was more of a nuisance. He didn't really want to take any responsibility. The city failed by allowing him to apply for a temporary CFO after there was an electrical fire in the home during the pandemic. To Judge Lopez originally in February, identifying that this was a retaliatory case, that he was only going to hear about the case on retaliation, no CFO, and habability. COVID came, and it prohibited us from being able to go to court. Still during that time when the governor opened up for construction to happen, my landlord, John, never sent people over to, again, cure those issues other than painting on the outside. And then we had court in October. Judge Lopez's whole song began to be totally different. The whole ideal and premise that we were supposed to stand on went out the window. He basically told me I had to put up $9,000 or he would not hear my case. And it basically backed my family and I into a catch-22 situation. Either I had to agree to stay for November and pay John and be out by December, or be out in 72 hours. So being a mother of three, I had to do what was best to give myself some time to, again, try to find something during a pandemic. So leading up to that, this wonderful tenant union sought me out. They were guiding me through this process because I had never been through anything like this before. I was looking for other places. I was trying to understand processes, and they did such a great job with helping me with law, helping me with resources, with what to file, who to talk to. And ultimately, I couldn't find anything. I reached out to my landlord because he told me to email him and see what he could do and talk back to his lawyer. He then told me, well, my lawyer advised me not to consider, what you emailed me. I know this is a messed up situation, but I'm going to continue with what I what was happening in court to a marshal coming to my home at 9 o'clock at night, beating on the door, handing my son the eviction paperwork, didn't ask for anyone 21 and older. My son was only 15. I was asleep at the time. I had contacted him about the way and manner in which I was served, and that he knows that I was working from home as a teacher now in Buffalo, virtually, and that no one came during normal business hours. And it was ironic that Lisa was on the phone with me, because I was like, is this normal that someone comes at 9 at night, dressed in all black with no identification on them, and presents that type of paperwork to a 15-year-old? She said no. I asked if she would stay on the phone so I could contact John, because my iPad was not working for me to be able to record the conversation. And that is when he basically further shamed myself. He put me on speakerphone as he was out dining with friends at the distillery, and basically was shaming me in front of his friends that, you know, he had a tenant on the phone and everyone say hi. So we get to Friday, and again, the team was there. They were helping me with paperwork. I was still trying to reach out to John. I was trying to pack, teach, make sure my kids were fine in school. And then as Ryan and I were at the courthouse to file our paperwork, I was notified that I was going to be arrested, and that I was going to go to jail. So I was trying to find where my children were going to go, get everything in order for that. And it just happened so quickly. And I was just literally blown away with not only the force, but the blockading on both sides of the street. Both ends of the street were blocked off. It was double yellow tape, as if there was like a murder or some drug bust that was about to happen. It was very traumatic. They would not answer any of my questions. It was this premise that we are here to help, but yet the only help that was given to me as I sat in the back of a police car for 3 hours in handcuffs behind Clinton, where they didn't even tell my family where I was going, my children crying, was that, you know, we really don't know, but, you know, have you thought of going to social service and applying to social service? And that was like the gambit of looking out, and they impounded my dog. I asked them, they said, oh, we were trying to do something for her and for her dogs, and you all messed all of this up. And I had to incur yet again a cost to get them out, $130 the next day. So as they stated and alluded that they were doing so much to help me, it was a cost, and it wasn't any help. FACET called me. I was having some phone issues. I attempted to call back. The person didn't get back in touch with them. But that was really it. Like, have you thought about going to a shelter? Have you considered going to social service for help? So that was really my experience. And to not only did they not know who my arresting officer was, I was literally passed around. When they had to do my paperwork, I had to wait. I was in the back of a police car from 7:30 till about almost 11 o'clock in handcuffs. They finally took off the handcuffs. They were waiting because none of the officers wanted to touch my paperwork because no one knew who arrested me, what was the issue. The lieutenant that was there, LaFlaze, he came, and finally at almost midnight was when I was released to my father. So this was a very interesting, traumatic, hurtful experience, and I felt failed on a number of levels, because this could have been dealt with a lot sooner if the city would have done its job when it comes to making sure those violations are not only cured, but the certificate to occupy is not only to protect the tenant, but the landlord also. And for the fact that he didn't have one for 5 years, should have been a big issue. And the fact that there was an electrical fire, the fact that there were rats in the townhome, the fact that there were a number of things that happened before the pandemic, should have gotten a different type of response from the city that deals with that particular code violation section.
Well, Cleonda, so a couple of things here to make sure we understand the full picture here. You were laid off from the Rochester City School District last winter amidst those wide-scale layoffs. Is that correct?
Yes.
How long had you been working for the district?
I have been with the district for several years. I left. I came back. So before I left, I was with them for about, 10 years, and then I went to a charter school. Then I came back. And when I came back, that's when I got laid off that December. I came back that September, laid off with a group of teachers. Around the time I came back from the hotel with the children.
So you you go through that layoff in the midst of those city school district layoffs last winter. Then the pandemic hits. Obviously, everything gets compounded. And you're not, we've been pointing out to listeners that if you hear the term eviction moratorium, your story is just one example that evictions are happening. People shouldn't think that they can't happen, but they're not supposed to happen if people simply can't pay. What was the actual technical reason you were given for your eviction?
The technical reason for the eviction was because the judge said if I couldn't give him $9,000, he wouldn't hear my case. So there was no technical reason, because under the holdover, monies was not supposed to be brought up, because he would have to basically conclude that particular hearing, and he would have to refile paperwork for back rent, and not to mention that his lawyer on the record stated in February that they did not want back rent. They just wanted to take possession. And that's when Judge Lopez immediately said that this sounds retaliatory. And not to mention, Judge Lopez also had a case in 2018 with a woman that had a similar issue as myself. And he allowed not only for this woman not to pay rent, but he made sure that this landlord got the place up to code, that he obtained his CFO, and that things were habitable for this woman. So I was quite shocked that under the law and under a holdover case, that the same judge that took an oath to uphold that basically turned the law to meet whatever he wanted to at that moment.
Hmm. And Cleonda, I haven't had a chance to speak to the police chief or the mayor about this. The mayor in a statement has said the city has done all it can for tenants, and she wants the emphasis to be placed on the state and federal governments. But when it comes to the police showing up and sort of blockading your street and the actions that you saw, do you have a message for the chief or the mayor that you've sent? I mean, like, do you feel that the city handled this appropriately?
I just think that was an abuse of resources. I believe that it is important to know that someone was held up right up the street on Main Street. When I was sitting in the car, I heard a person was about to jump off a bridge. Someone had got stabbed somewhere else. And imagine if that type of force is shown across the city to real issues that need that type of attention, where our city could be. And also, if the systems that are put in place to make sure violations are cured in a manner that is timely, this situation wouldn't even be what it was on December the 18th, a day I'll never forget. If we have an issue of rent control, which is which really would be an issue as well as good cause eviction, this would have been prevented altogether. And this gives the tenant an opportunity to not only stabilize themselves, but by instituting rent control and lease renewal requirement, that the landlords must have a specific reason to evict. And this was not done. And when the city was brought into this narrative back in last December, they could have really helped to be the mediator, to be proactive. And then when we look at other, I believe, other things to where tenants have the opportunity to purchase act, which puts the land back into the community's control,
which offers tenants the first opportunity to buy the building if the landlord is selling, where you had, in my case, my landlord has over 160 violations on all 200 of his properties, give or take a few. And if the city was aware of this information, because this was from their database, then again, being proactive would really have relieved what happened on December the 18th.
Well, I will say, I don't understand why anybody is getting pulled out of their house on a Friday night when it's 15 degrees outside. But again, like I said, I haven't been able to talk to the mayor or the police chief. Or frankly, the judge. But one more question for you, Cleonda, and then I want to talk to Graham and Liesl before the hour ends here. How are you now? What's the situation now? Because I know people will be wondering if you're doing okay.
The situation is the same. Liesl and the team have been trying to help me to find a place for my family because, again, going back to the lack of rent control, rent right now is anywhere market rent between $1,900 and $2,200 for a three-bedroom for me and my family. So I am just trying to create some normalcy for my children, getting them ready for school, trying to find a place to stay intermittently at the same time.
Graham Hughes, what are the immediate measures you want to see taken on really on any level of government to start to address this?
Well, I mean, a number of them have already been laid out. We need a real permanent universal eviction moratorium passed by New York State. I'm hopeful that the legislature and state government will make that happen. We also need good cause eviction protections passed locally here. The city of Rochester can do that at any time. Like Cleonda said, good cause eviction protections, which give tenants the right to renew their lease, would have prevented Cleonda's eviction before it even happened. Those are the two big anti-eviction pieces of legislation we want. We also want the full cancellation of rent and mortgage payments. Again, a bill that the state legislature can pass. This addresses the root cause of the COVID-19-induced eviction crisis and supports both tenants and landlords in making up missed rent and mortgage payments that they have had. Unless we do that, millions, and I literally mean millions of people in New York State alone are at risk of eviction. And that's completely unacceptable. We also want an immediate housing access voucher program to immediately house all homeless folks in our community and across New York State. The fact that anybody is going homeless in the dead of winter in the middle of a pandemic is completely inhumane. The other two demands that we have are not related to housing, but they are, they are related to housing at the same time. The one is the passage of the New York Health Act. I apologize. We need that to guarantee everybody health care, again, in the middle of the pandemic. And finally, we need to reinvest in our community by defunding the police. And we make this demand in solidarity with Free the People Rock. The fact that the city government spends the amount of money that they spend on the police every year is a direct reason why we do not have the kind of funding for housing that that our community needs and deserves. Mm-hmm. So those are our big demands as an alliance. And this is just our platform for surviving the coronavirus pandemic. In the long term, what we really need is decommodified social and public housing. The real root cause of this crisis is not a few bad landlords. It's not big corporate landlords. It's the for-profit housing market, the for-profit housing system that whose primary goal is to make profit and not provide housing for people. So until we get to that point, these kinds of things will continue to happen. So.
And Liesl, let me close by asking you to just describe for listeners realistically how many people you think are in Cleonda's situation that could be facing something like this.
Goodness. So we know that since October 1st, over 100 eviction warrants have been signed in the city of Rochester. And we know that there are eviction cases on the docket. What we're worried about is the fact that if this bill doesn't get passed, we will just continue to see this as it continues to get colder in our winter months and as the coronavirus cases are rising. What we saw on Friday, December the 18th, was, an incredible misuse of our resources. Imagine, code enforcement and the city has the possibility to to enforce things like this against, you know, landlords who are keeping people in deplorable conditions, and they haven't done that. So imagine if they had gone to arrest John Trickey for the way that he's been treating, you know, people, countless people across the city, instead of arresting Cleonda, you know, a mother who's just trying to fight to make her situation right. So that's really, you know, this is bigger than the eviction crisis, although evictions and slumlords go hand in hand. This is really, as everyone's been saying, about changing the messaging around housing to housing as a human right.
I want to thank our guests for being here to make their case. And Cleonda, I'll just say, I know it's been a rough few weeks. Thanks for sharing your story. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Liesl Coleman from the Citywide Tenant Union of Rochester, thanks for making time for the program today.
Yeah, appreciate it, Evan.
And Graham Hughes is the co-chair of the Rochester Housing Justice Alliance. Graham, thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
Our thanks to Assemblyman Damon Meeks, who joined us earlier this hour as well, and Gino Finelli from City News for his consistent and clear reporting on these issues. Rob Braden is the engineer of Connections, and Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on member-supported Public Radio.